Elections and Rules, Bend, Oregon, March 18, 2005, 4 p.m.
We'll come to order.
Is that too loud out there?
Perfect.
This time, what I'd like to do is just start off what we normally do on our outings like this, is go through an introduction of the committee members. We will start with Representative Farr and just where you're from and what you do.
My name is Representative Debbie Farr, and I am from District 14, which is located in Eugene, Northwest Eugene, Bethel, Danabo, Santa Clara, then it also extends north, including Junction City and Cheshire, and to the shores of Fern Ridge Lake, including a very small town called Alpador.
Thank you.
I'm Representative Kim Thatcher. I come from District 25, which is Kaiser, which is just north of Salem, and it goes up to St. Paul and into Newburgh.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Representative Chuck Burley from House District 54, the City of Bend, and I want to thank you and the committee members for taking the time to come over here today, and I want to welcome you to Bend. Also want to let you know and everybody else that Representative Wisnett is on his way from Salem, but it was a little tough for him to get out of the Capitol as early today.
Thank you. I'm Representative Steve March from the center of Portland, House District 46. But it's great to be back in Bend. I used to live in the mid-80s. I live just south of town here.
Senator Ben Wentworth, District 27, right here. Greatest districts in the state, I might add, for the record. And I'd like to thank you, Representative Kitts, for bringing your august committee to Bend, and also thank Cletus Moore for all the staff work that it takes to put these together. It's quite incredible. So thanks and welcome.
Thank you. And I'm the chairman. I'm Representative Derek Kitts. I'm from Hillsboro, Oregon, and would just take issue with the greatest district in the state.
Do we have a vote, Mr. Chair?
Amongst the committee, yes. It's great to be in Bend, and I've got to have a special thank you to Senator Westland and Representative Burley for coming to me and requesting that the committee do come to Bend and hear from the folks from Central Oregon, and lobbied me not so hard, but made a wonderful recommendation that we come to Bend and hear from the folks over here so that we can take your concerns about some of the issues that we're dealing with in the legislature back to the legislature and hear from the people that really count. So it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having us. Annetta is our committee assistant, and Cletus is our committee administrator. They came over early this morning to set up the venue, and so special thanks to those folks as well. With that, we're going to be hearing taking testimony on three different items: on House Bill 2614, House Bill 2551, and House Joint Resolution 1. At that point in time, if time does not allow, or if the committee doesn't last up until 5:30 at that point, we will stand at ease until 5:30, and then we'll have the possible introduction of some committee measures and possible approval of drafting requests. The reason that it's 5:30 is there's a statutory time frame from the time that something's publicly posted until the time the committee can hear it. So that falls at 5:30 today. So I'll thank you for your indulgence if you want to stick around if it doesn't last that long. Otherwise, at this time, I think we have one person to testify on HJR 1 and one person to testify on House Bill 2614. So we'll get those out of the way, and then we'll go into House Bill 2551, so it may be a little out of order. So at this time, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2614. If my administrator will read the summary, I would appreciate it. We'll let Cletus read the...
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2614 prohibits electors from participating in more than one nominating process for each partisan public office to be filled at a general election.
Thank you, staff. And before we get on with this witness, it was my brief oversight. We have a guest with us today, former state representative and former majority leader and a good friend, Representative Tim Canope, joined us. So thank you for being here today, Tim. At this time, you must be Marie Gibson.
Yes.
Since you're the only one signed up, with the League of Women Voters,
right.
So please state your name for the record.
Yes, Chairman Kitts and members of the committee, for the record, I am Marie Gibson. I'm the president of the League of Women Voters of Deschutes County. I live at 19530 Mammoth Drive here in beautiful Bend. And as you know, the League is a grassroots, nonpartisan organization which encourages citizens to be informed and to participate in the government process. We are always interested in the election process, voters, and voting systems. The League of Women Voters of Oregon has already testified and turned in testimony in support of this bill, and I am here to endorse the testimony on behalf of the League here and to ask you to move HB 2614 forward with a due pass recommendation. Given some of the problems during the 2004 election cycle when members of majority parties signed nominating petitions for minor party candidates, a proposal such as HB 2614 seems necessary. It is clearly unfair to allow a person registered to a major party to also participate in nominating candidates for another party. There must be assurance of adherence to the principle of one person, one vote. So I'd like to thank you heartily for allowing me the opportunity to testify on this issue without having to travel to Salem. And we appreciate that. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Are there any questions of this testifier at this time? Thank you very much. House Bill 2614, Marie, just for your own knowledge, I have a distinct feeling that it will move forward. I don't know if you looked who wrote the bill, but I have a feeling that it will be moving forward. So appreciate you being here today. For any clarification, House Bill 2614 is my bill. With that, I will go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2614. At this time, we'll be opening up a public hearing on H.J.R. 1. Okay. The light? Hartso. If I'm breaking out in a cold sweat, you now understand why. Please state your name for the record.
Yes. Chairman Kiss and members of the committee, thank you for coming to Bend. For the record, my name is Delight Hartsaw, and you spelled it, or you pronounced it correctly.
Great.
From the League of Women Voters of Deschutes County.
Appreciate you being here. We're going to just put a little hold there. I skipped over Cletus. He's going to read the bill summary first.
Okay. Good.
Cletus, please do your job.
Mr. Chair and committee members, H.J.R. 1 amends the Oregon Constitution to require annual sessions, odd years not to exceed 120 calendar days, even years not to exceed 60 calendar days.
Thank you. Please proceed, and thanks for your patience.
Okay. I live at 60663 River Bend Drive in Bend, Oregon. The League has already testified and turned in testimony in support of this bill. But I am here to endorse this testimony and to ask you to move this bill forward after careful and serious discussion. Annual sessions would offer greater opportunities for citizen involvement. The population of this area of Central Oregon is growing rapidly. Our growth brings changes that may need to be addressed quickly. Having annual sessions would help give our citizens a greater voice in making positive changes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this issue without coming to Salem.
You are absolutely welcome. Colleagues, are there any questions of this particular testifier or any comments regarding
H.J.R. 1. This is one of the newer bills that this committee has decided to hear, not wanting to step on the toes of the Speaker of the House and the Senate President. They are currently addressing this via a work group, is my understanding, to deal with all sorts of issues as related to legislative efficiencies. So hopefully they'll be bringing forward a proposal that either addresses this and incorporates it, or at least vets it out to some degree. So,
Representative Burley. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ma'am, I'm curious, the League of Women Voters, what HGR 1 does, as you pointed out, is that it goes to an annual session, but specifically it says that in the odd number of years, it's 120 days, and the legislature would only consider measures pertaining to the state budget. Then in the even number of years, it would be 60 days, and it would be both public policy and the budget. And I'm curious, how flexible might the League of Women Voters be on the length and what is covered in those two sessions?
I think the League could be very flexible on that, and that's why they really support having a broad discussion of this whole issue to work out all those details.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
More than welcome. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Though I thank you, am I saying that right?
Very good.
And thank you for coming. I've been intrigued with annual sessions for, you know, a number of years, and I think like any system or structure of government, governance, there is pluses and minuses to both sides. And I certainly understand the arguments that in today's ever quickening paced world, annual sessions could respond more nimbly to problems that arise, issues that need to be addressed quickly. My concern, on the other hand, is trying not only to get greater citizen involvement, which you so articulately point out, but also being able to bring a broader spectrum of our citizenship into legislative participation. If we go to annual sessions at current salary levels, I won't say de minimis, but they are certainly on the lower end of less.
Senator West, I'd ask you to state the salaries for the record.
Well, I believe after we took our third pay cut here in the last couple of years, I believe it was $1,283 a month.
That is
something
correct.
In there. To make my long-winded soliloquy, to make my point, I would be concerned that as onerous as it is right now to take a 6-7 month slice out of a year or out of every 2 years, I almost think it would be prohibitive to ask employers to take 3 months out of 1 year and functionally, you know, 3 out of another and disrupt normal employment patterns without having to increase substantially legislative salaries to where it was a living wage job. I think we would exclude many participants in the legislative process, thereby creating what Oregon currently does not have to endure, which is a permanent professional political class. I mean, that's one side of the argument. It's very involved. So I was wondering what your thoughts were in terms of A, increasing legislative salary, and B, how that would impact positively participation in the legislature.
Well, I think that the State League has suggested a very short session restricted solely to the budget, alternating with, you know, everything else on the alternate year, so that it wouldn't be 6 months for either one of them. So that might cut down on the cost.
If I made this, it'd be about 3 and 3.
Whatever. But that's what you would have to work out in a committee of, you know, many people besides the legislators.
Has the league taken a position on salary increases, I think, is part of the question of the senators?
I don't believe so.
Because if the senator would like to make a conceptual amendment to this bill at this point in time and move that out for a vote, I'd be amenable to that.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair, just to point out what so many of us at this dais understand, and at least one individual in the audience that I know of, every legislator makes a tremendous sacrifice of both family and finances to serve in the legislature. I mean, we obviously do it willingly, it's something, but I mean, Oregon is unique in our combination of biannual sessions, extremely low salaries, and in the session year, there is no limit. I mean, we could go for 2 months or we could go for 11 and a half. Something needs to change, and I will allow that as my thinking on this issue has evolved, I was always a biannual session, that works best. Now I'm starting to lean towards the annual session concept, so I appreciate your testimony and your support.
Thank you so much. Are there any other questions or comments regarding HJR 1? Seeing none, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Do you like copies of this at all?
If you have copies of your testimony, Annetta will take them, and then Cletus will walk over and grab them from Annetta and give them to us. Thank you again. Seeing no further discussion, and thank you, colleagues, I think that is a debate that is going to rear its head as the session rolls on. So at this point in time, I will close the public hearing on HJR 1. At this time, we will have some heated testimony, I'm sure, over House Bill 2551. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2551. Cletus, would you like to read the summary of House Bill 2551?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2551 prohibits opening of return identification and secrecy envelopes in elections conducted by mail until 8:30 a.m. Prohibits ballot drop sites established by persons other than election officials. This does have a fiscal impact. Maybe not yet.
Thank you, Cletus. At this time, we'll call forward D. Berman. D., it's good to see you again. I'm going to guess your testimony hasn't changed.
Not a lot. Not a lot.
It's a good bill.
I'm trying to argue that.
Please go ahead and state your name for the record.
Okay. Chair Kiff, members of the committee, my name is Dee Berman. I'm Crook County Clerk and also President of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. And we are opposing House Bill 2551, which prohibits the opening of return ID and secrecy envelope. This bill would roll back voter protection that were proposed and approved by the same committee in 1997. That the bill that was proposed in 1997 was designed to eliminate delay in election results because we were prohibited from preparing and counting absentee ballots until election day. Vote by mail isn't new to Oregon voters. It's not even relatively new. Voters have been voting by mail since 1989. They're comfortable with it. and they clearly proved their preference for it in 1998 when every county in Oregon overwhelmingly voted for vote by mail to make all elections vote by mail. I can personally attest to times when prior to all elections being vote by mail, when people would come to my counter during a primary or a general election, and it would be after the election, and they'd be mad because they hadn't gotten their ballot in the mail. And it didn't matter how many times we advertised or had it in the media that it was a poll election, people just expected their ballots in the mail. And consequently, we had a huge upsurge in absentee registration. In 1996, Cook County's absentee registration was around 11,300 in September. The parties did a big push for absentee voters, and my numbers increased almost 4,000 absentee voters. We were not able to prepare or do anything with those envelopes until after election day, until after 8 p.m., because you couldn't open or prepare those envelopes for counting until you had checked your poll books and made sure that those absentee voters had not also voted at the poll. So we were excluded from preparing them. Well, this House bill that was proposed, it actually was a Senate bill that had been that the House bill had made some amendments to, had a section that would allow us to open those ballots 5 days prior to the election. I'm not sure how we were going to monitor and police the poll book versus the absentee ballot. That wasn't clarified in the bill, but they did see a clear need that we needed the time to prepare and get ready to count those ballots, because they wanted the results immediately. They wanted them election night, and that just didn't happen for days and days and days, because when you have to do so much in a short period of time and you cannot hurry the process, it's a very complex and detailed process, and you don't want your workers to feel like they're rushed in order to get the results out, or you don't want them working 20 hours unless they absolutely have to get those results to people. So that time that we have to prepare them is essential for us to get those ballots counted and at least get you some preliminary numbers on election night. And I'm not really sure just how widespread the complaints of fraud within county election offices are, since no one in the Clerks Association has been made aware of any allegations, but obviously this bill and a couple others are proof that there are some people who do believe that election officials are committing fraud. And I would like to reassure everyone here that county clerks and election officials, elected or appointed, take an oath of office, and we take that oath very seriously. We swear to uphold the laws and constitutions of the United States and the state of Oregon, and we vow to faithfully and honorably discharge the duties of our office to the best of our ability. It's the same oath you take, and we truly, truly live by it. Everything that we do is governed by statutes and administrative rules. We're mandated to use a 65-page vote-by-mail manual, and that is an administrative rule. That manual is an administrative rule that we're governed and directed to abide by, so that we're all doing the same thing at the same time. And we review that manual annually to make sure that everything is current and up to date, and the conference, at all of our conferences, we discuss it. We make sure everybody is understanding and doing it the same way, and we're all reading off the same page. Thank you for your courtesies to the association and for the opportunity to speak to you today, and I urge you to oppose House Bill 2551.
Steve.
Thank you so much for being here. Just I had a couple clarifications. First of all, I don't think anybody's accusing anybody of fraud. I want that just to, you know, I don't think that people thought that going into the 2004 election that what happened or is currently happening in Washington State was going to happen or saw it the potential. We're just seeing some flaws in a system that was existing that unfortunately were brought out after the fact. And same thing with Florida in the 2000 election. I think that's the purpose. Well, I know that's the purpose of this committee, is to just look at certain things dealing with the elections process, making sure that we are preemptive in addressing anything that could potentially go wrong. So I want to just make that perfectly clear, and I understand how we in the legislature feel kind of under the same microscope. One person may do something wrong, then we're all guilty of doing something wrong, and then you pass laws and look at problems that may be do or do not exist, etc. So I don't want to make you feel that way in any way, shape, or form. So I'm speaking on behalf of the committee there. They just don't know it. I just had a couple questions. It said three paragraphs up in your testimony, you write, House Bill 2551, if approved, will not only take us back to a delay in election results, it will have a significant fiscal impact on both the state and counties. Now, I want to elaborate on that. If, in fact, you were not able to open the ballots until the specific time, as indicated in 2551, you would still have a preliminary result on election night, just as you do now. You just wouldn't be able to certify that election on election night, just like you, a lot of times, are not able to do now. Is that inaccurate?
Yes. We don't certify.
Straighten me out.
We actually are not. We don't certify our election until 10 days after. We have 10 days that other counties get ballots to us. We have to ensure that those signatures that were challenged, that there is no resolution, and if there is no resolution, then we certify our election. As far as I'm sorry, I've forgotten the first part of your question.
Well, I said that I didn't think that currently on election day, whether you can count them as you're coming, you know, as they come in, or you are required to wait till 8 o'clock, that regardless of which action is done, that by election night, you don't officially have the results in either situation, or would you have in either situation? Is that correct?
We have some fair figures on election night by 8 p.m. because generally we have processed the ballots that have come in. My counting board, for instance, I have them come in at 1 o'clock, and my opening and my inspection boards have been working for, I use 5 days. We're allowed 7, but I use 5 because we're a small county and we don't, like last November, I think it only took us 4. We have those ballots ready, and they're ready for the counting board. So they come in at 1 o'clock. We have a pretty good fair amount of ballots that are ready to be counted, and they are counted, and they're done by 8 o'clock. You get a good view of what the election results are going to be with our first figures. It rarely, unless those races are extremely close, we just don't see a big change in the outcome of the election after our first initial media report.
So, and we're saying two different things, or maybe we're saying the same thing. You're saying that based on the first onslaught of ballots that are counted, generally speaking, unless the race is very close, that's the pattern that's going to progress throughout the night.
Right.
Okay. I'm saying that if you were not able to count the ballots open them until 8 o'clock that night.
The morning.
Essentially,
would be totally different. We wouldn't have the ballots counted by 8 o'clock. I mean,
way too much to do prior to getting them counted. So there, it's going to take longer. You're not going to have a very substantial number of ballots counted by 8 p.m. for that media report. It's going to be very few.
I'll move on from that. I'd like to talk for just a few seconds. That's impossible. I am a politician. So a few minutes on your spreadsheet outlining these costs. I'd like to start with the top, and obviously forgive me because I've just looked at this.
Mm-hmm.
The discrepancies in the cost is $16,000. The assessment here is $16,000 if you were not able to, if our bill were implemented, it'd be $16,000. Currently, it's $2,248.
Mm-hmm. Just that one portion I'm talking about, the opening and the
come in, or you are required to wait till 8 o'clock, that regardless of which action is done, that by election night you don't officially have the results in either situation, or would you have in either situation? Is that correct?
We have some fair figures on election night by 8 p.m. because generally we have processed the ballots that have come in. My counting board, for instance, I have them come in at 1 o'clock, and my opening and my inspection boards have been working for, I use 5 days. We're allowed 7, but I use 5 because we're a small county and we don't, like last November, I think it only took us 4. We have those ballots ready, and they're ready for the counting board. So they come in at 1 o'clock. We have a pretty good amount of ballots that are ready to be counted, and they are counted, and they're done by eight o'clock. You get a good view of what the election results are going to be with our first figures. It rarely, unless those races are extremely close, we just don't see a big change in the outcome of the election after our first initial media report.
So. And we're saying two different things, or maybe we're saying the same thing. You're saying that based on the first onslaught of ballots that are counted, generally speaking, unless the race is very close, that's the pattern that's going to progress throughout the night.
Right.
Okay. I'm saying that if you were not able to count the ballots until 8 o'clock that night.
That morning.
Essentially, the
would be totally different. We wouldn't have the ballots counted by 8 o'clock. I mean, there's way too much to do prior to getting them counted. So it's going to take longer. You're not going to have a very substantial number of ballots counted by 8 p.m. for that media report. It's going to be very few.
I'll move on from that. I'd like to talk for just a few seconds. That's impossible. I am a politician. So a few minutes on your spreadsheet outlining these costs. I'd like to start with the top, and obviously forgive me because I've just looked at this.
Mm-hmm.
The discrepancies in the cost is $16,000. The assessment here is $16,000 if you were not able to, if our bill were implemented, it would be $16,000. Currently, it's $2,348.
Mm-hmm. Just that one portion I'm talking about,
the opening and the inspection portion.
Right.
Okay.
So, with that being said, line two, security staff.
Yes.
Under hours or units, you have 16. At a unit cost of $19, total cost $304. When you say security staff, I'd like you to elaborate on what that is indicative of, part one. And part two, why, whether you open them all day or prior or that morning, does security not translate down to the bottom one as well? Is that not a cost that's incurred?
That's because if I'm going to have to do everything in one day, I don't have the space in the courthouse, in my office, to do it in my office. So the opening and the inspection part and the counting piece will have to be done at an off-site. I'll have to rent those a place for probably 3 days, one to get ready, one for election day, and one to take down. The cost for security, I'd have to have the sheriff's department there from the time we took the ballots in until we were finished completely. I checked with the sheriff's office. That's their hourly wage for one of their security people. And there would be two, and I figured 8 hours because I think they're union, so they'd have an overtime. And I plug the overtime in. I'm guessing at time. I, you know, honestly can't give you a perfect answer, but that's why.
Okay, and I just wondered why it was on one and not on the other for the purpose of counting ballots, not so much the dollar amount. The second one that I want to skip down to is additional equipment and
mm-hmm.
storage.
Mm-hmm.
You have on here for the, if our bill were to go into effect section, two letter openers at $3,800 a piece for a total of $7,590 for two letter openers.
They're spendy.
They obviously
they are.
We'll
have to talk to Pentagon Pitney Bowes and find out why they charge that much.
Now, where are we getting those? Where are those prices coming from?
Pitney Bowes.
Pitney Bowes.
That's what I paid for my the one that I use, and it's probably. Two years old.
How big are these letter openers?
It's about this big, and it shoots the envelopes through extremely fast.
Right.
And it has such a fine cutting edge that it never cuts the ballots, and that's the one thing that we have to be very careful about. So you have to have a cutter or an opener that will facilitate
the work. So these are very good letter openers.
They're very good letter openers.
I hope
they beat the ones that we had that we used to have.
Okay. And I'm going to go to the next line down. The annual storage of these wonderful letter openers, you have $500. $480.
Mm-hmm.
How does that number, I'm not seeing it, you must have letter openers now, as you said, and you must be paying to store them somewhere?
No, they're in my office.
Okay.
They're maintained in my office. But it isn't just the letter openers, it's the additional tables and chairs, and I'm probably going to have to get room dividers.
Okay.
So I figured out what a storage unit would cost for a year. I don't have... We're really kind of tight for space. I have my personal office is pretty nice. I have a nice large office, but the rest of the
that's where we're counting the ballots then.
Actually, they do take over my office.
No, I appreciate that. The one final thing that I had was the telephone and internet hookup. You have $1,200.
I called our Jim Bowers, who handles our telephone system hookup and for internet. He said that was probably a low bid or a low cost, but
okay.
He didn't have one because there are no phone lines out there. I wouldn't have my own number. I wouldn't have my office number. So I'd probably stay out there because nobody call me.
As a side note, I would say to Senator Westland, one internet and telephone hookup is equivalent to 1 month legislative salary. So maybe we're in the wrong business. I'm going to take just one time out and let Representative Dalto and Representative Wisnant introduce themselves for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Gene Wisnant, and I'm glad to be home. I haven't been home in a couple of weeks. I live in District 53, which is Deschutes County, and appreciate the Chair inviting me to sit in with the committee today, and appreciate all the testimony and the people came out to testify.
Thanks, Gene. Billy?
I'm Billy Dalto, State Representative for Oregon's 21st House District in Salem. I apologize to the committee for being late. It's my third committee meeting today, so apologize.
You were excused prior, so
thank you.
Thank you for making the journey over here. Committee, are there any further questions?
Oh, I do have a question.
I'm sorry. And Representative Holvey, I promise it wasn't partisan, man. Come on.
He always says that.
Please.
I'm State Representative Paul Holvey from District 8, which is Eugene, Benita, Lorain, Central Lane County. It's nice to be here. Sorry, I was a little bit late as well. Some statutes kind of held me up.
Thanks for being here.
Sounds like a speed trap.
Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Clerk Berman, I'll ask the chair's question in a slightly different manner.
Okay.
On a regular election, like the election this November, say by 9 p.m. in the evening, what percentage of your total ballots have you counted by 9 p.m.?
Well over half.
Well over half. So you've got a really good feel for the election at that point. So, if this was to be put into place, what kind of, can you even ballpark how many you'd have by that time?
I'm guessing we would probably only be in, we only have 17 precincts. I'm guessing we would probably be into precinct 3 or 4 by that time.
So much less.
Yeah. It may not be quite half. I'm trying to by 9 o'clock.
Well,
by 9 or 10, yeah, we've gotten a pretty good amount of ours. We're just in the middle then of working those that came in at 8 o'clock, those last ones. And usually my opening and my inspection board are gone by 10. And then my counting board generally gets through at around midnight.
So you have generally 100% count by midnight
we
of the
have
ballots in hand.
We have counted all of our ballots that have come in that night. We wait if another county has gotten a ballot, but we will have counted everything that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative March. Representative Thatcher?
Yes, how many ballots does your county get on a big election? I've heard percentages all the time, like we have a big turnout, but I'm just wondering approximately how many does your county get on a big election?
We're usually over the state amount. This last time we were 86%, I think, or 84. We were
numbers. How much would that be? 100,000,
200,000? Oh, no, we don't.
No idea.
I get where you're from. 11,000, I have 11,000 registered voters, so we're talking maybe 9,000 have voted.
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
How many, these openers from Pitney Bowes, I'm just curious, how many do they open per hour?
Well, it isn't so much, it's the fact that each board would have to have one. It isn't so much how fast they'd open them. It's just that you've got different boards at different places. You don't want, you want to make sure that you do not get your ballots mixed up. So they cannot, things can't travel back and forth.
Are you talking about from precinct to precinct? You keep precinct
from board
separate?
To board.
Okay.
Can you clarify board to
yes.
board?
We would probably have I'm anticipating, we were hoping to keep it down to no more than four to six boards, but I put in here four boards. We talked about six in the beginning, but we were hoping we could do it with four. That would give me three letter openers, and then I've got some little ones that some people could use. They sound like cat had their tail stepped on, but other than that, they're fine.
Could I clarify what a board consists of and what its function?
A board is for the opening board, I would have two members of one party and two members of another party. We always have, and then I'd have a chairperson. Mine are most often, I have more Republican board members than I have Democrat, and then I have one non-affiliated, and she's kind of my wild card. I use her when I can't find an extra Democrat. We always have plenty of Republicans, but
we appreciate that trouble in finding Democrats. So. That was partisan.
Anyway, this is the board, sir.
Well, this is just for the point when you're taking ballots out of the secrecy envelope, not for the ID. You don't need that.
Yes, you do. I have a board, and you open the outside the ID envelope, and I have one board that does that. They separate that ID envelope. They separate the secrecy from the ID. That goes the secrecy then with the ballot goes over to another board. That board then opens that envelope.
Well, how many? Just back to the opener. How many does the opener open per hour?
I don't know. I can get you that. I don't know.
Follow up.
Do you use the opener for both the ID and the secrecy envelopes?
No,
or do you use
the ID.
Okay.
I had a question, and this also goes to some of the bigger picture things that this committee is looking at. Is it completely up to your discretion? I mean, I see this obviously you have a quote of some sort from Pitney Bowes for a letter opener. Yes. Is that entirely up to your discretion as the county clerk, who you buy that from? Is there a specific model that you have to, that you're regulated to buy? Are all 36 counties using the same model, or is that
I went with the cheapest bid.
I'm sorry?
I went with the cheapest bid. I got a bid from Eagle and a bid from Pitney Bowes and Bullfrog Enterprise.
Okay.
And...
Is that within your? Or I guess to clarify my question, were you getting quotes just for the purpose of this spreadsheet, or could in fact, if you wanted to go buy one of those machines, is that within your discretion that you could just go, you find the cheapest one and you buy that one because for whatever or whichever one you want, I don't care if it's the cheapest or
right,
not. I'm
right.
I'm not going to ding you for fiscal accountability here.
My judge is here, so.
But you have within your purview and your job description, you are able to buy whatever letter opener you want. Is my question?
If I have to be within bidding or contracting laws, I have to. It has to be a certain amount, and I have to have that approved by county court or.
Okay. So it's not mandated by the state that says you must buy model X, Y, and Z.
No, it is not. Not on a letter opener because it doesn't.
I'm really not trying to micromanage the clerks, I promise. It's just a question.
Judge told me this envelope opener was going to give me trouble.
The $5,000 toilet seat at the Pentagon. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much. I think the letter opener is a problem. I mean, I think that you could probably, the average person could probably open 10, maybe 10 envelopes an hour, or I mean a minute, and so you could, that's 600 an hour, so I'm just simple math here, 15 hours to count, not to open 9,000 ballots that you're receiving, so 15 hours, and it sounds to me like you're saying that people have to actually physically pull the secrecy envelope out of the outside envelope, is that right? So they're going to do that anyway, and it's going to be a person step anyway, so what difference does it make if you have these these openers, I mean, you split it up, have a couple of people opening and pulling at the same time.
I wish it were that easy.
Well, explain to me why it isn't.
We had, in the past, we had the envelope opener that just opened one envelope at a time, and it opened from the end. You didn't open the entire lengthwise, which this one does, and it's a lot faster for the board to get things out. We didn't have our envelopes open. I think it put us back about
2 hours.
Put us back probably about 2 or 3 hours. The new ones made it that much faster for us to get the ballots ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, jeez. If this is about the letter openers,
it is not.
Representative Burley, then Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing that we haven't heard discussed is, you know, we're in the process right now of developing the Oregon Centralized Voter Registration System under the Help America Vote Act. And all of these ballots have to be, they're scanned, the signatures are scanned, the signature comes up for verification and all that. And though we haven't really seen this implemented statewide yet at the county level, the question is, I mean, how many of these terminals are we going to have, and how, you know, does this also have a multiplying effect on with this proposed change?
I don't actually know how that process is going to work because we still compare it to the actual card. We don't have that capability yet, so I can't tell you how that will work. I'm hoping it'll be a lot faster, but I don't know that.
And perhaps maybe some of the subsequent witnesses could address this too, but I would respectfully ask that perhaps as clerks we could maybe try to find that out, because the online voter system is supposed to be up and operational for the next election.
The centralized voter registration system, they've got pilot counties. They're hoping to bring Eugene and Union County, but I'm not positive that they're going to be absolutely ready by, well, they have to be ready by me, but they're doing a mock election right now. They're preparing to do one. So
I believe it's supposed to be operational for the November 06 election.
We have to be ready by January 1 of 06.
Right.
Yes, we do. So we're hoping that all counties will be online by November 2005. The test pilot counties, and there's five of them, will be hopefully get through the May election. Once those test counties have gone through, then getting the rest of us online should be fairly simple. That's when the state will purchase counties like my county that do not have the scanners and the wands. They've already got those ordered, or we're on a list to get them. But
yeah, and I appreciate that. I don't have the answer to my question either. I'm just asking that as the Clerks Association, perhaps, as we're trying to figure out what the workload is and the process for handling these ballots, we might want to take a look at what is the online voter registration system going to do to either help or hinder that process. Will that shorten it, or will it make it longer?
It's hard to say.
It's hard to say until you actually start using something. I don't anticipate that the online voter registration system would expedite the process of getting the ballots ready and counting them. That is basically the centralized voter registration system is basically the tool that we'll have to ensure that one person is not voting in more than one county in Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Colleagues, let's let the germaneness and I understand where Representative Burley's going with that. Let's just make sure that we're germane to the House Bill 2551. I would hate to ask Dee to speculate on certain things because it may be held against her later. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I ask make a statement and ask a couple of yes-no questions?
Please.
I appreciate your word germaneness. I must say I'm incredibly impressed by the committee's intense interest in the administrative efficiency of the Crook County Clerk's Office.
We're very thorough in this committee.
As a budgeteer, I appreciate the detailed nature of the questioning. And if I may, before I begin my questioning, I'd like to recognize Deschutes County's fine clerk, Nancy Blankenship, and just let everyone know that in a very, her first election in a new building with seven initiatives on the ballot that just happened to be a presidential election, it was executed in a very timely and professional manner. So you're very welcome. My questions. Are clerks positions partisan positions? You're elected as a Republican or Democrat?
Nonpartisan.
And that's why I asked for a series of questions.
I know, but it's my job. I'm the chair.
But would you still assume that of all the 36 clerks' positions, that it's a representative sampling of population of Republicans and Democrats across the states? In other words, all 36 positions are filled by a representative sampling of D's and R's? Maybe throw in a couple of I's?
I don't know what other people, I don't know what their political party is. It isn't something we discuss.
And I know the association has taken a position in opposition to this bill. Do you know of any clerks that individually support this bill?
No. 36 counties oppose this. 36 county clerks oppose this.
We're not done looking yet.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I appreciate the fact that I've joined this debate late, and I do think it's an important issue, but as I first listened to this bill and I read it, and I will fully acknowledge I have more to study, I think we've got a solution here that's in search of a problem. I think the issue is ethics and integrity, and I have not heard, seen, have anyone even hinted at any election fraud in Oregon in recent years. So, like I say, I will hunt with you because it should be ferreted out, but as we sit here now, I must say I am leaning in opposition to this bill. Not that I have a vote on the committee, Mr. Chair.
And Senator, I greatly appreciate, after your 60 minutes on this committee, being able to make that assessment.
I am an expert.
Are there any further questions of this person?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Mrs. Berman, could you tell me in the last election how many ballots you challenged on signature?
That we had unresolved?
Or resolved 12. Challenge. 12.
I think we had about 12. Is that about right? I think we had about 12.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up. Thank you for asking.
Good. So you guys don't ask him on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
I'll try to show respect to it.
Thank
my
you.
My follow-up question.
Oh, I thought you didn't have it. Never, go ahead, please follow up.
Mr. Berman, do you have any idea from your contact with other county clerks of how many ballots were challenged in Nome County or Clackamas County?
No, I don't know. And these are just signatures that either there was no signature on the envelope, they forgot and we weren't able to get a hold of them to get in to sign that envelope, or their signature did not match their voter registration card and We do call them. I go to their homes personally and take their ballot to them for them to resolve or sign. We do go the extra mile trying to resolve all of those. And we have very few, but it's the ones generally that come in the last day and you're not able to get a hold of someone.
And one more follow-up. Last question. You would agree with your expertise that this verifying the signatures is the most subjective part of the voting process, would you not?
I think when you when you actually do it, I mean, you can look at a signature and know immediately if it's a good signature. If there are very few that we question, and we do take a training. We have taken trainings through the state police on signature verification, and then we train our boards from that training. It's kind of the trainer does the training. And there are certain things you look for and things you ignore.
Does that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dee.
Well, we might call you back. It's not done yet. I might ask for a written quote on that Pitney Bowes letter opener. Jeez.
Maybe you and I, Mr. Chair, should go sell them.
At this time, I'd like to call forward Nancy Blankenship, the Deschutes County Clerk. She'll be testifying in favor of this bill.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Redmond.
I'd like to say yes, but
she might have found the new information that I was seeking to change her mind.
Who invited him?
Please state your name for the record.
Chairman Kitts and committee members, I'm Nancy Blankenship, Deschutes County Clerk, and I'd also like to welcome you to Deschutes County and welcome home to those of you that are from Deschutes County. My testimony also is in opposition of House Bill 2551. The first section that talks about delaying the ballot envelopes, I'd like to talk a little bit more in detail about how it would affect us. The reducing it from 7 days to 1 day starting on election.
I think when you when you actually do it, I mean, you can look at a signature and know immediately if it's a good signature. If there are very few that we question, and
We do take a training. We have taken training through the state police on signature verification, and then we train our boards from that training. It's kind of the trainer does the training. And there are certain things you look for and things you ignore.
Does that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Deep. Oh, we might call you back. It's not done yet. I might ask for a written quote on that Pitney Bowes letter opener. Jeez.
Maybe you and I, Mr. Chair, should go sell them.
At this time, I'd like to call forward Nancy Blankenship, Deschutes County Clerk. She'll be testifying in favor of this bill.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misread.
I'd like to say yes, but
you might have found the new information that I was seeking to change her mind.
Who invited him?
Please state your name for the record.
Chairman Kitts and committee members, I'm Nancy Blankenship, Deschutes County Clerk, and I'd also like to welcome you to Deschutes County and welcome home to those of you that are from Deschutes County. My testimony also is in opposition of House Bill 2551. The first section that talks about delaying the ballot envelopes, I'd like to talk a little bit more in detail about how it would affect us. The reducing it from 7 days to 1 day starting on election day would have significant impacts for our processing. And just as a little bit of a background, it was in about 2001 that they increased those days to 7 days to allow us more time to open and process those ballots. As an example, in 2004, the presidential general election, Deschutes County experienced its highest voter registration, 86,134, and the highest voter participation, 86.5. In June of the same year, we had about 75,000 voters. So we had an incredible increase in voter registration, which was seen across the state. We hired 50 what we call election board workers to do various jobs. 28 of those were our inspection and opening boards that we had. The rest of them were at our drop site locations, did transport for us, greeted the public, helping in other ways. For the opening of the envelopes and the pre-inspection process and the ballot counting, we spent a little over 2,300 hours. Had those hours been compressed to election day, we would have had to hire approximately 200 temporary election board workers. Hiring and employing that high volume of temporary staff would require the time to hire them, to train them, and the space to accommodate them, while not compromising the exacting and detail process election officials are responsible for overseeing. And those are some things that are important to us and important to you and important to our voters. The Deschutes County Election Office does not have sufficient space at this time to accommodate that large of a temporary staff, so we would have to find another location to do that. We figure we'd have to rent a location for about 4 days, as Clerk Berman alluded to. We'd have to set up, have a couple days, we figure, to do the processing, and then another day to break down. We would not change the location where our ballot counters are. That involves some processes that we don't necessarily want to get into. So we would transport the ballots to the opening inspection location and then return them back to our office for counting. So that would add some additional security risk and cost. Our estimated additional cost based on the November 2004 election is an additional $30,000. If each election was that size, it would be the cost for each election. The ballot counting could not commence until late afternoon on Election Day, the consequence being a very low election at 8 o'clock. One of your questions was, what percentage do you think we'd have? We're thinking maybe 15%.
1-5?
1-5.
Okay.
By that time. In Deschutes County, we started counting at 7 a.m. on Election Day for the presidential election in November and counted until about 4:30 a.m. the following morning, using 3 ballot counters and 3 staff members. With this process, not knowing exactly what the details are going to fall out, it may be days before the election results are finalized. Some of the areas that the increased costs are going to cover is overtime costs with our paid staff to help oversee the part-time staff to continue as much of the expertise as we have in the office. Increased facility requirements, supply costs, hiring and training costs, and increased security costs. Compressing election processing with increased temporary election workers increases the scope of the responsibility of those full-time election staff to oversee, as well as our temporary staff that we use that have been doing this process for many, many years. We've got some election staff, board workers, that have been doing this 15 years, and we have a couple that are upwards of 40 and 50 years. So they're quite knowledgeable on the process and how they open and process the ballots. So our concern is the increased risk of error with having that many new election board workers and spreading ourselves thin and overseeing those. On Section 3 of the bill, it talks about staffing each of the ballot sites and then counting the ballots at each of those ballot sites before transport. We have, in Deschutes County, have 2 24-hour, 7-day-a-week drop sites that are open on Friday, the day the ballots are delivered, because some folks get their ballots and take them down and deposit them that day. So those locations would have to be closed because we wouldn't have the funds to man that for 2.5 weeks prior to the election. And at this last general election, 96,000 of our ballots came in through those, which is about 11.2% of all the ballots that came into Deschutes County. So they are significantly used. The elimination of the drop site locations would be required because of the cost. One of the things that I think is a big concern is other counties are starting to use the U.S. postal type mailbox drops. There's 2 issues with that. Those would have to be eliminated, and they've been quite well received in those counties that are using them. The other issue of concern is risk. When you open those boxes and then have to count those ballots at that location, you're out in the weather. Earlier this week, we had quite a windstorm, and there's a risk, substantial risk, that we need to consider when thinking about this. And the security measures that are currently in place would be jeopardized for safeguarding those voted ballots. The remaining drop sites in Deschutes County are staffed by either city or county staff members who are deputized. The drop sites are open during their normal business hours, and we have our city staff, or our county staff, and deputies that transport our ballots back and forth. And our concern is, for us here personally in Deschutes County, is when somebody drops a ballot off at a location at one of our libraries, at our city halls in Sisters and in Redmond, that ballot goes into a sealed box. If we had to count them there on location, we'd have to unseal the box, count them, seal it back up, bring it back to our location, recount them, and I just think that's adding more risk to a process that you're trying to ensure greater, to lessen the risk. So I think we're going in the wrong direction there. So I would urge you to oppose House Bill 2551. And if I can make one more comment, if I could address Representative Burley's question about the Oregon voter, centralized voter registration? No? Okay.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Some of the smaller counties aren't at the point where Deschutes County is, where we scan our voter registration cards in, so they aren't familiar with that process. I don't believe, just from our experience, that the OCVR is going to impact one way or another the opening and inspection process, because that's a totally different process. My interpretation of the bill is I would still be allowed to do the signature verification. I just wouldn't be able to open it and inspect them.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I might say that this committee is polite.
Is what?
We always say thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Ms. Blankenship, just my statement would be that it appears to me that this proposal in the bill would actually increase the risk of ballots being tampered with instead of decrease the risk. Would you agree with that statement?
That this House bill would increase the risk? That's my presumption.
So has there ever been an incident where the security of these drop site boxes were compromised that you know of?
That, not that I'm aware of.
So how secure
follow
are
up.
The... Oh, follow up. He's good. How secure are the sites, you know, not being familiar with your
sure.
drop sites here?
There are two 24-hour, 7-day drop sites. One is located in our building, and one is located in our road department building, which is east of town here in Bend. They are inside a building. It would be like going up to... It's like a bank where you drop your deposit in kind of thing, except you open the slot and you drop your ballot in, and it's inside of a building.
Kind of like a bank deposit.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Mr. Chair, may I follow up?
Follow up.
Yet another question. So the ballots then are inside this enclosure. Then when someone from your staff removes the ballots, what are they then placed into?
Two of our staff members of differing parties go to the ballot drop site with a metal box. They open the drop site and remove the ballots from that location and put it into our metal box and seal that box up, and then take that back to our office, to our vote-by-mail room where that's opened, and then we count the ballots.
And so how many ballots would you estimate are removed at a time?
Depending on what stage of the election you're in, anywhere from 30 right at the beginning or kind of midway through, because depending on what's on the ballot, you may see a huge amount right at the beginning, kind of slow down, and then a huge amount at the end, and anywhere up to maybe 300. So when it gets to those points, then our... retrieval is much more often. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, are those temporary staff members that are going out to collect the ballot drop-off locations? Okay. I just
followed up.
I just thought it was interesting. I wonder if the clerk's offices around the state are the only offices that hire their staff based on their partisan registration. That's pretty interesting to me.
As a follow-up to that, if I may?
You may follow up.
We also send our paid staff, too, if the situation is needed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the committee and, you know, let you know that we have an excellent county clerk staff here. We've been blessed. We had a lady named Susie Penhaller who had been here many years, and we're now fortunate to have Mrs. Blankenship and her staff, Tiffany Westcott, a friend. I think the hope you understand the intent and reason this bill was proposed by some in the legislature is, you know, we don't have to look hard in the paper to see what happened in Washington State, and that concerns us tremendously. It should help. It should concern anyone voting, any citizen of America, what's happened up there. And I'm not here to say that we have that problem in Deschutes County. I have the utmost trust and confidence in Mr. Blankenship.
But I think that we want to do sure, be sure that we, the integrity of our system is beyond recall. And I think we have that in Deschutes County. We want to be sure we have that statewide, and that's why this is being presented. I think you and the other clerks have brought some great points that we didn't think about as far as the cost. But I think, as a guest of this committee today, I'll probably recommend to the chair some. We still need to look at some ways maybe to amend this bill, because the cost is over, you know, staggering of what you presented to us. But I think it's something we want to work on. We want to make sure that our system is, you know, is the best it can be, and there's no, we don't have an event like Washington State. Because if I'm not mistaken, I believe in the last governor's race in Deschutes County, we had quite a large number of ballots that were contested, or the signatures were held. Because I remember, and that was statewide, because they thought there was a chance that there was enough ballots that had been held back that had the signatures had to be verified. And I think I was even on alert to go out and, like you're talking, like Mrs. Berman talked about, calling those people up and have them come in and let's check this ballot to be sure we can count it. So I think we have had in Deschutes County in past elections more than Crook County reported as far as ballots that are challenged. And as we grow in Deschutes County, then we're going to be facing problems like we have in Multnomah County with larger populations. That's going to be more difficult to do. So I would hope, too, that the county clerks could come up with proposals to help assure the integrity of the system if this proposal does not see the light of day, that we can come up with ways to other measures to protect and be sure that we don't have something happen in Oregon like happened in Washington State. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for my...
Representative, please feel free to ask your question now.
That was a comment.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
You'll have the last question.
Well, I have a series.
We'll play it by follow-ups.
Oh, okay, then. More process-oriented again. I'm really just trying to, like Representative Wisnant was saying, I want to make sure that we do make this process fair. Don't want to, you just come up with a proposal and you talk about it, and that's why we're here. So with the 2,332 hours you're talking about, is that any of that include receipt of ballots or verifying of signatures? Okay.
Follow on.
Does your county print the precinct code on the ballot and machine sort, or do you hand sort by precinct while they're still in the ID envelope?
We have ballot styles. Each ballot style represents a certain location. So if you are, for example, for this particular election that's coming up in May, there are the special districts. We have just under 70 ballot styles. And so some of those have as low as one person getting that particular ballot style. So it's based on your location, and a number of the precincts have multiple ballot styles within the precinct. So we process, so people get their ballot by ballot style. We count our ballots by precinct. That information is printed on the outside of the ID return envelope.
Follow up?
And that's when you separate the precincts as well. They're still in the ID envelope.
That's correct. When the ballots come in, then we sort by precinct.
Okay, and then also following up on his question regarding the 24-hour, sorry? 24-hour size is my last question on it. Is there anybody in those buildings, like the ODOT building or the other building you're talking about, that would have access after hours, or is it locked? Is it within the building? Is it locked in a
Within the
place,
building, or? It's like, for example, our building, the new state county building. The building would be locked. It's located in a room where we do the mail, which is locked. But that has access to by other departments. But the box that our ballots are in is locked, and our department's the only one that has access to that lock.
Thank you. And Nancy, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate you answering the questions. This time we'll call Judge Scott Cooper.
Chair, I'll hand those to the clerk. Chairman Kitts,
Vice Chairman Thatcher, Vice Chairman Holvey, members of the committee, thank you so much for traveling to Central Oregon and for letting me be here today. I am Scott Cooper. I am the county judge of Crook County. That would be the front yard of Bend. And to Representatives Wisnett and Westland and Burley, we appreciate your directing the committee's attention over here. My county clerk in Crook County is Dee Berman. So it was a rather foregone conclusion that when we found out you were coming here, I would be here too. My position on this was also relatively a foregone conclusion. You can imagine what it might be. I have two observations. I don't want to dwell on the issues that have already been so aptly made by the clerks themselves. But as I look at this and I listen to the testimony today and I've listened to all this, it strikes me that there's an analogy to be made, which is that those of you who are sitting here today in this committee are the directors of this great company called Oregon Inc. And like all directors, you are looking out for the future and you are visionary and you are trying to do things that are right for the corporation. But I think all of us who have been in business have once in a while learned the lesson that it's important to go down to the factory floor and walk around with our great visionary ideas and talk to the workers that actually have to implement them and say, tell us what you think about this before we act too precipitously. You've got 100% of your factory workers telling you that the way this is put together right now is not a very good idea and won't get you where you want to go. For the best of reasons, you're promoting the integrity of the system, and that's what you ought to be doing. But I think you may be a step ahead of yourself, and it's time to go back, rethink, regroup, revisit before we advance too quickly on this. The second point I would make to you is simply to call your attention to the fact that if you do decide to proceed with this, you need to pay close attention to Article 11, Section 15 of the Oregon Constitution, otherwise known as the unfunded mandates section. And Kurt, you all know that the unfunded mandates provision is not triggered unless you have less than 60% of each house voting for the measure, or if it the total cost on the local jurisdictions is greater than 1/100 of 1% of our total budget. That doesn't sound like a lot of money until you apply the math. In Crook County, 1/100 of 1% is $4,616.32. So at this point, you, based on our clerk's numbers, if they are correct, is you are about $12,000 short of being able to exempt yourselves from that. So to the degree that a fiscal impact statement is being considered for this bill, it might be a good idea. There may be a price tag attached. I appreciate greatly your coming to Central Oregon. You didn't have to bring the clouds with you. You could have brought some rain. We hope that you enjoy your time here, and I thank you for taking time.
Well, thank you, Judge.
Welcome, Mr. Chair.
I understand now why the letter openers cost so much money. Answer my question. Are there any questions of the judge? I would caution the committee, tread lightly.
Well, Mr. Chair, actually, it's just an observation, and thank you, Judge Cooper, for coming and pointing out the obvious to us. Even without the letter openers, even if the chair came over and helped you open those ballots, we would still be over the $4,000 mark.
I'm going to let it go. Thank you, Judge.
We would welcome the chair's participation in any future election.
I'm in Washington County. I got to worry about my people there. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
Could I just make one observation, and that is the 732 issues that Judge Cooper and I have debated, I find that for the first time ever we are potentially on the same side of the issue.
Senator?
It is a pleasure, Senator.
Judge, thank you so much for taking the time to be here on this Friday afternoon. It's appreciated. This time I'll call Kathleen Pillar. Chicken.
Yeah.
Get it on the record.
I'm Kathleen Pillar. I was the observation team leader for the last general election in Crook County.
And all I can say is I don't see how they got it done as fast as they did, cutting another, you know, that many hours off their potential time would be impossible. There is a way more to the process than just counting the votes. The initial process prior to that is so lengthy that there's just no way they could do it. I think it's insane. And that's my opinion.
Any questions?
We're sitting down and not allowing any.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. At this time, we're going to have to take a break in the final testimony to skip down on the agenda item for the introduction of committee measures and possible approval of drafting requests, because it's a time certain. I misread earlier to 5:30. So, Representative Burley, would you like to make that?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee request the Speaker to approve that Legislative Council draft a bill on campaign finance reform.
Representative Burley moves. We request the Speaker to approve that Legislative Council draft a bill on campaign finance reform. Senator Westland?
I believe Annetta might have an observation.
Representative Burley is a visiting member. Well, I was trying to let him in his district make the motion. Well, sorry, Representative Burley.
Well, I appreciate the offer.
I'm glad to have extended it. Representative Holvey.
Mr. Chair, I move the committee request the Speaker to approve that Legislative Council draft a bill on campaign finance reform.
Representative Holvey moved. We request the Speaker to approve the Legislative Council draft a bill on campaign finance reform. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Annetta, will you call the roll?
Aye.
Aye. Excused.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. Thank you, committee.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee introduce LC 2112 and LC 3499 relating to limitations on existing mandated health insurance coverage as a committee bill.
Representative Holvey moves the committee introduce LC 2112 and LC 3499 relating to limitations on existing mandated health insurance coverage as a committee bill. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. For the record, LC 2112 imposes a tax on diesel fuel, increases truck registration fees, and repeals the weight mile tax on flat fees.
Yes, Representative, thank you very much. I realize the misprint in the script now. After Representative March read the LC summary, I don't need to see a need to repeat it. So is there any discussion? Seeing none. Annetta, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, committee. At this time, we will go back to the public hearing on House Bill 2551 for the last person wishing to testify, unless there are further people wishing to testify, will be Andrea Blum.
Blum.
Blum. Yeah, I saw you.
Hope you're saving the best for last.
I think we are.
Thank you, Chair Kitts and members of the committee, for coming to this side of the mountains. I appreciate being able to testify. I very seldom ever have this opportunity.
State your name for the record.
Yes. My name is Andrea Blum, and I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Deschutes County and of Oregon. I live at 18076 4th Avenue in Bend. The League has already submitted testimony against this bill, and I'm here to endorse that testimony in opposition of HB 2551, because this bill is unnecessarily restricts the election procedures. Before vote by mail, I worked at the polls for a number of years. And since vote by mail, I've had the opportunity to work on election boards from time to time. And I'm here to testify that that is a very professional and secure process. And as a member of the League of Women Voters, I'm much more attuned to these kinds of issues than many temporary workers might be. And I'm always standing up for the process.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. Thank you, committee.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee introduce LC 2112 and LC 3499 relating to limitations on existing mandated health insurance coverage as a committee bill.
Representative Holvey moves the committee introduce LC 2112 and LC 3499 relating to limitations on existing mandated health insurance coverage as a committee bill. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, for the record, LC 2112 imposes a tax on diesel fuel, increases truck registration fees, and repeals the weight mile tax on flat fees.
Yes, Representative, thank you very much. I realize the misprint in the script now. after Representative Marsh read the LC summary, I don't need to see a need to repeat it. So is there any discussion? Seeing none. Annetta, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, committee. At this time, we will go back to the public hearing on House Bill 2551 for the last person wishing to testify, unless there are further people wishing to testify, will be Andrea Blum. Yeah, I saw you.
Hope you're saving the best for last.
I think we are.
Thank you, Chair Kitts and members of the committee, for coming to the side of the mountains. I appreciate being able to testify. I very seldom ever have this opportunity.
State your name for the record.
Yes. Thank you. My name is Andrea Blum, and I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Deschutes County and of Oregon. I live at 18076 4th Avenue in Bend. The League has already submitted testimony against this bill, and I'm here to endorse that testimony in opposition of HB 2551, because this bill is unnecessarily restricts the election procedures. Before vote by mail, I worked at the polls for a number of years, and since vote by mail, I've had the opportunity to work on election boards from time to time. And I'm here to testify that that is a very professional and secure process. And as a member of the League of Women Voters, I'm much more attuned to these kinds of issues than many temporary workers might be. And I'm always standing up for the process when I hear people discussing some election problems in other states and holding up Oregon as a wonderful example. Unfortunately, I see this bill as trying to correct a problem that doesn't really exist. And I think the best way to deal with the uncertainties about potential election frauds that have occurred in other states is to work with the Secretary of State and the election board officials and the county clerks and to see what their ideas are of how to plug in some procedures that would alleviate your concerns. And once again, I really appreciate your coming to this side of the mountains, and I hope you enjoy your time with us.
Thank you so much for taking your time to testify. That's the valuable component here. That's why we're on. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions and seeing no further testifiers on House Bill. Absolutely.
Thank you for allowing me to speak at the last minute. I'm Jackie Ellers. I am the chair of the Deschutes County Voter Integrity Program. For 3 years, we've worked with our county clerk through the last election cycle. I worked with your representative, Jeff Smith, on the EIP board. We have developed a rather comprehensive program, and it works totally in conjunction with our county clerk. She has provided us with all of the state manuals. We go to all of the training sessions. I have a group that has been with us now for 3 years who observe at the elections, and it's been a real experience. What I have to say is this is a very, very tightly run show here. Through the last election cycle in November, we worked with the various observers, chairs throughout the state, and we would have nightly phone conversations through Mr. Trussino's office. And we would talk about problems we encountered during the day and any possible additional observations. It's not a problem with opening the ballots. There are so many other problems that are involved that you really need to be looking at places where we're going to have problems with the upcoming storage of provisional ballots. We didn't have many this year, mostly because voters really didn't understand that the process was available to them. Part of the problem in Washington was the mishandling, not putting those in separate envelopes and setting them aside until after election and then counting them. We have other problems with people who get ballots in the mail that no longer live in the state or in their county. And I've heard people tell me that they live in California. Their ballot still goes to a parent or a relative or a friend, and it's also for purposes of maintaining driver's licenses. They fraudulently do this, and they mail their ballot down to them. They mail it back. It's mailed here in Oregon, goes into the process. Storage. In some of the counties, Washington County being one of them, they do not have facilities to separately lock up your ballots. They are in a lunchroom that is accessed by anybody in the clerk's office who has a key to the lunchroom 24 hours, 7 days a week. So it isn't a matter of whether those ballots are opened up 7 days early, 4 days early, or 1 day early. They're still accessible to people to come in and walk off with them. So maybe we have some other bigger problems than dealing with this one. And I have to thank Nancy for her cooperation. She's made her office totally accessible to us. Our training on all of our people are very well trained. We spend 7 days. We know what goes on. We see the lock process, and I think you really need to concentrate someplace else. Thank you.
Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time to testify. I really appreciate it. And just in response, very briefly, this committee is working very close with the Secretary of State's office. They have a representative here tonight, as they've had at every meeting, and on top of weekly meetings and lunch meetings and everything else that we're doing. We're working very closely with the Secretary of State on all of these issues. So thank you for your testimony. Colleagues, is there any further discussion for the good of the order? Or for the bad of the order?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westland.
I'd just like to make an announcement that former state representative and now director Tim Canope has invited the committee and selected members of the audience to dinner at his expense in a location to be determined, and we appreciate your hospitality brought to us by the Building Industry Association and your personal generosity.
The committee had no quorum and isn't topics of discussion at that dinner. Are there any other announcements or statements, comments, questions, concerns?
Colleagues, thank you for your time on this Friday night. A special thanks to Senator Westland and Representatives Burley and Wisnett for their participation on this committee. As an FYI, this committee is traveling around the state. This is one of eight stops this committee is making. It's a huge sacrifice that this committee is making. Weekends, it's probably the most aggressive committee in the process thus far. And for those of you that are upset that we're going around and that I am doing this, you have no one to blame but former Representative Tim Knope, Fortis E, who got me elected. Representative Burley.
Chairman, thank you. There was one other announcement I'd like to make, and that is that Senator Westland and myself and Representative Wisnett tomorrow, we're going to be doing town halls throughout Deschutes County. We've got one in La Pines on River here, back here tomorrow at the Senior Center. Then we'll be up in Redmond and Sisters in the afternoon. And you're welcome to attend any or all of those. We can visit.
What time are they?
What time's La Pine?
La Pine is at 10 o'clock. We'll be in Sun River at 11:30, here at 1:30. We'll be going to Redmond at 3:15 and Sun River at 5 p.m.
Sisters.
Thank you. Seeing no other announcements that can't be made off the record, adjournment. Thank you.